Today is January 30th, 2022. This is part 26 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Jim Haggart. Last name spelled H-A-G-G-A-R-T. My name is Tom Martin. Hey, good afternoon, Jim. How are you today?
Doing great, Tom. Good to hear from you.
Super.
Hope you're doing well.
Doing well, thank you. And it's good to hear you're doing well, too. Jim, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes. Please.
Super, thank you. We left off last time talking about 2009, and you were going to do a kind of a longer trip there in the fall of 2009. Can you pick that thread up?
Yeah, for sure. So 2009, November, it's a little late in the season, but Art and I decided that actually Bruce wanted to participate as well initially, but we decided to do a trip in the corridor region on either side of Bright Angel Creek. And the idea here was to try and knock off as many summits as we could, including Brahma, Diva, Hillers, Clement Powell, maybe Manu.
Wow.
And that was it. And we had the time for it. And we always have more ambition, I think, than we actually have capacity. But that's better than the other way around. So, it worked out. It worked out to be a great trip overall, but it did get changed up a bit. And the first thing that happened was, like, I flew down to Phoenix as I always do from Vancouver.
Okay.
And Art met me at the airport there, and the weather was not looking good on the north side of in the northern part of Arizona. And so there was actually a big storm forecast for that night. So we decided to stay in Phoenix that night and go up the next day. So we're already kind of like a half day behind, right?
Okay.
On top of that, Bruce decided at the last minute that he could not participate. So it was going to be just Art and myself. So the next day we did go up and to Flagstaff and visited with Bruce there. I remember Duart was unfortunately down. She works down at the classical music station in Phoenix, and so she's always doing these long-distance commutes back and forth from Flagstaff to Phoenix. So this is one of those unfortunate times when we didn't get to meet with her. I talked Bruce into going out for Mexican food in Flagstaff because I just can't get enough of it up here.
Uh-huh.
And, there's some pretty nice restaurants in Flagstaff for that. So we did that and relaxed and basically let this storm pass through, right? And then finally the next morning, this would have been the 29th actually of November 2009, Art and I drove up to the rim there and left our car on the south rim and then started down the Kaibab Trail, south side of the canyon. And the first thing we ran into was a trail building crew in the Red Wall. And I had actually never encountered these people, the people that keep the trails in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And we spent quite a bit of time, I'd say about a half an hour, talking to the foreman, I believe it was, and some of the participants. Excuse me here, Tom. And we actually were watching them do this trail construction, and it was very impressive because they were taking these Coconino blocks, I guess they'd brought them down, on mule,
mm-hmm,
or however, and then splitting them and then putting them in vertically along the trail between water bars, right?
Right.
So that they would build up, they built up this really solid rock foundation for the trail, and then they would put gravel on top of that. So it was a very impressive piece of work, and I was really, it was really satisfying to see that quality of work being undertaken in the parks.
Nice.
I mean, it's just so much of what we see these days is kind of artificial and slapdash, without much sense of craftsmanship. And I have to say, this looked really nice seeing that work. So anyways, it was fun to chat with those folks. And we headed on down then to Phantom Ranch. So the plan was that we would go up from Phantom on the Clear Creek Trail and then ascend the Red Wall at Sumner Wash and then go after Brahma and Deva in as our first attempt. And so we were hanging out in Phantom Ranch, and it was actually kind of interesting because we ran into a young couple, a girl and a fellow, Aaron and Ben, I think they were named, and they're from Flagstaff, and they had just come down off Zoroaster. So that was pretty neat because we were going to be going right up there. So they'd done a successful ascent, and they told us, there's no water up there. You got to carry all your water from Phantom Ranch or from Bright Angel Creek, mm-hmm. right? And so we were kind of concerned because we had expected that we'd find some water, particularly in the water pockets in Sumner Wash, and then locally here and there up above. So on the strength of their discussion, their statements, we loaded up full packs to carry up the. Excuse me again here. Oh man, I shouldn't have had that piece of my wife's homemade bread just before I talked to you.
Uh-oh, sorry, my bad.
Yeah, that's all right. No, that's all right. So, anyways, so we loaded up with our water bottles. We had about 8 liters each to head up there, and we started up the trail, and we got to the Sumner Wash, and this, the typical campsite there that we've stayed at a number of times. And we did actually find water in the water pockets.
Ooh.
So they must have just missed the pockets that we typically find there, and that was encouraging. And since by that time it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's November, we figured it was better to camp there on the sandstone slabs than start up the red wall because, you only had another 45 minutes or an hour of light at that point.
Right.
So we did that, and I remember we put up the tarp, Art's little Art Light tent tarp, to protect us what looked like threatening rain clouds, and it never did rain, so that was a positive development. And then in the morning, we got a fairly early start because we wanted to avoid as much of the sun as possible. And we basically got pretty far up into the Red Wall Gully before that sun did come out. And one of the things we were interested in from talking to Aaron and Ben was that they said they had rappelled down through the drops in the Red Wall in Sumner Wash. And it was kind of surprising to us. I guess maybe they did that because they just wanted to do it as fast as possible. But it's basically a third-class route,
right.
So if you work your way back and forth and... So they had left their rope at the second drop. Excuse me again. They had left their rope at the second drop.
Really?
And when we got there with our full packs, we didn't feel like down climbing. There's a ledge that you come in, you work your way in from the east on a red wall ledge, and then there's a short down climb, 30 feet, maybe 25 feet, to get into the gully again. And... it's vertical, but there's big holes.
Right.
And we're a little apprehensive about doing it with our full packs. So Art scrambled down it without anything, any mm-hmm. packs, and he found Aaron and Ben's rappel rope that they'd left at that second drop. And
did they like leave it by mistake or?
No, I think I don't know what the reason was, but there was a fray in the rope, and they had told us about this. That may have been one of the reasons for leaving it behind.
Yeah, but
I'm
that's
not
like
sure.
leaving your trash.
Yeah, well, you go in climbing routes and you find lots of climbing trash, right?
I guess.
Rappel slings, runners, and stuff like that all over the place. So,
yeah.
I mean, sometimes when you're doing a descent on a rappel, you don't have any option except, to leave something, right?
Right.
And I'm not going to fault what they did.
Okay.
I just know that we used that rope.
So
Art went down and he cut off the part at the fray. He cut off a chunk of it then, and he carried it back. He brought it back up, and then we used that to lower our packs down, right?
Okay.
And then that's at the first fall in the Red Wall. And then you walk up a little bit the gully there, and you have another climb you have to do on the west side of the gully. And it's an interesting face climb. I think you've done it to get to Sumner Point, Sumner Butte, rather. You have to do this.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting climb. And then we used the rope again to haul our packs up that second climb.
Cool.
And it's you don't want to slip on this that climb. It's pretty steep, maybe yeah. near vertical, but with good holds. But I do know there's a step around, a corner, like a buttress that you have to step around, and it's pretty airy. You know, you've got 30 or 40 feet of exposure, and mm-hmm. so you have to be careful. But we scrambled up it. We've been up it now, you know, 6 or 7 times, I think, on various hikes.
Okay.
And got to the top, and by this time, it was, for some reason, why was it? Oh, that's right, yeah, okay, so we dropped our packs there. So this is fairly early in the morning, right?
Right.
And the plan was we were going to work our way in the afternoon around towards Hatton Butte.
Okay.
And, but we decided before we did that we'd go over to hike over to Bradley and Demaray points. And these are not particularly summits, although they look like this from below. You know, they look fairly imposing, like they are summits. But they're basically plateau benches on the top of the red wall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you follow the red wall at the horizontal around below the southeast of Zoroaster, you eventually get to Bradley Point.
Okay.
And then Demaray Point is the next one.
Okay.
So basically it's just traversing the red wall. But, you know, it's fun to get out on these points because they give you perspectives that, you know, you quite often don't find from any other place in the canyon. You
That's
know?
Right.
You can, like Demaray has a really great view down into the lower end of Clear Creek.
Oh, wow.
And you can see that pinnacle, that Tapeach pinnacle that's prominent down there, and which I call Zoroaster Pillar it's essentially in Zoroaster Canyon on the ridge between Zoroaster and Clear Creek. And anyways, just you know, a nice place to be, airy place to be, out on Demaray Point. And then we had to reverse our route back to our pack, which we'd left at the notch that goes out to Sumner Butte. And by that time, it was getting pretty late in the afternoon, and we knew we had a fairly good walk ahead of us to get over towards Hatton Butte on the Red Wall Rim. And we decided that we would just camp where we were. You see the pattern happening here? You know, your plans constantly get changed because you underestimate the time required, or
yep.
something interesting comes up, and
yep.
you decide to do that instead. And so, but that's the way we like it, you know. And constantly changing things if we need to or if we want to.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was an interesting little butte, Supai Butte, that's just to the west of that saddle in the Sumner Wash, at the top of Sumner Wash there in the Red Wall.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fading light, I went over to try and get up that. It's not named or anything, but it's, you know, it's got a nice appearance to it. And
yeah.
and I remember poking around on the south side at the south end and almost committed to a mantle, but it was getting, that might have gotten me up, but it was getting pretty late, and I didn't want to take a chance on getting stranded. So I basically backed off and came back to the saddle, and that's where Art and I settled in for the night. So... it was a good first day getting out to those points, right, Bradley and Demaray. And from a summit's perspective, I kind of count them, you know, as places of importance
mm-hmm.
because they are imposing from many parts of the canyon, particularly
right.
from below. And they require an adventure to get there. And there's usually some sort of a story that goes along with them. So, you know, it was an accomplishment for me in particular. So. So the next morning, pretty cool, and we got up early, and we started the traverse along the Red Wall Rim below Zoroaster on the west side. And it's fairly slow going, but, you know, you can make steady time. And eventually we got to the saddle below Hatton Butte. So this would be the saddle between Hatton Butte and Brahma Temple.
Okay.
And we knew we were going to continue on because our planned attempt on Brahma was going to be on the northeast side. So we dropped our packs there, and then we did a nice walk out to Jones Point. And all this way, we had seen footprints ahead of us on top of the Red Wall, which was kind of, you know, unusual because it's a somewhat out-of-the-way place unless you're going for summits. And We found out afterwards that Aaron Tomasi, I believe it was, climbed Hatton Butte.
Okay.
Like a week before we were there. So that would explain what the footprints were going out towards Hatton. And we had heard from Jim Ullman that the climb up Hatton was a little interesting, but not too difficult. And he did say that it was easy fifth class. And we weren't really up for easy fifth class. We had a rope, but mostly for hauling and for emergency rappels,
mm-hmm.
Not for protection. So we weren't planning to attempt any technical climbs on this, just third class scrambles. So we did hike out to Jones Point, and that gave us a nice place to try and scout out breaks through the Supai on the east side of the Buddha Temple complex. In particular, we wanted to look at the getting up to Hillers and Clement Powell Butte. And so we were, you know, looking at that to see if there was a third-class way through those breaks. And as far as I know, there isn't, but we'll get to that more later. So anyways, we backtracked from Jones Point and then continued on the traverse to the north, and you have to start ascending there. And it turns out that looking from the south, looking to the north where we have to go, so we're heading for the saddle that's between Brahma Temple and David Temple. And that was where we wanted to get to launch a climb of both of those temples. And so we're picking our way along these ledges, these Supai ledges, and it's not at all obvious that they're going to go through, you know. And in fact, one of them, the one we were on, it looked like it cliffed out. And so we were a little nervous and apprehensive because there wasn't an obvious way that we would, you know, alternate route to take. But the thing is, you keep walking, and all of a sudden you get to this spot, and it's huge, right? There's a huge slope to walk on, and no problem whatsoever, and a very faint deer trail that was there right along the edge of the Supai cliff below. Mm. So, you know, it was no problem, and we finally got up onto the saddle there between Brahma and Deva. Again, kind of late in the afternoon because we'd had the walk out to Jones Point, and so we figured with the early nights in November that we would just camp on the saddle there and then do our climbing the next day. So we did that, and it was a really cold night, I remember, because although we slept well, when we got up in the morning, I pulled my water bottle out of my backpack. And as soon as it got out of the backpack, it started to freeze up inside the bottle.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of neat to see that chemical reaction taking place, you know, so rapidly. But anyways, in the morning, it's gorgeous weather, though, perfectly clear, right?
So is this the morning of December 1? What day are we now?
Let's see. This would have been November 29th. We started up. We camped on top of the Red Wall. The 30th. We went out to Bradley and Demaray, 38th of September, April, yeah, so 31 days in December, right?
Right, this is November.
Yeah, 31, so this is going to be the morning of the 1st.
Okay.
Yeah, of December. And so you're keeping more detailed notes than I am. So our objective for this morning was Brahma. This day was Brahma, and Brahma is a big summit. Have you been up it?
No.
Okay, well, it's another one to do, and I haven't been up it yet either.
Yeah, okay. Oh,
And yeah, exactly. So I think most people do Brahma these days, typically, from the south using the Zoroaster approach, and that makes sense, except that we didn't do it that way because we were carrying these heavy packs. And so, and there was also the objective of walking the Red Wall Rim, which we like to do as well. So we decided to, you know, by looking at the topo maps, this was before Google Earth, it might have helped us out had we had it then. But looking at the topo maps, we thought there was a break, a pretty reasonable break on the northeast side of Brahma that would get us up through the upper Supai. And so we kind of were pinning our hopes on that, and we started along the base of the cliff there and got into this bay, and we're looking all over the place and trying, you know, trying to start up on short faces and things like that. And it became evident that it wasn't going to happen, you know, for us anyways.
Okay.
It was just beyond our skill level. And it actually looked like there had been part of the wall that had fallen away recently. So at one point, the base of that cliff may have been more easily traversed than when we were facing it. In any event, we realized we couldn't do it. And so, you know, at this point, looking at the map, you can see that the going around Brahma farther to the south on the east side doesn't give you any more options. The cliffs even look worse. So,
okay.
So we decided to skip that and focus our effort for the day on Deva, which we did. We traversed back to our campsite, and I made a note in my notes that on the way back, I got on a cliff 20 feet above where we should have been. And it turns out we had like a third of a mile that we had to retrace our steps along the top of that cliff because we should have dropped down, right, before that. And I made a note in my notes that says I wouldn't have made that mistake 20 years ago. And so I'm so glad I've kept these notes because that was in 2009, which is now 13 years ago, or 12 and a half. And, you know, I'm referring to events that were like 32, 33 years ago, right, from now. Anyways, it's probably true. I would have been more observant back when I was younger and wouldn't have missed that the proper route. But anyways, you know, all things being what they are, we retraced our steps, got back down to the saddle, and then started up to Deva. And I remember we got into, when you're going to Deva, so we're walking north from the saddle, you go up the ridge, and you have to go through the final, the uppermost Supai cliff just on the east side of that ridge. And it's not a very difficult climb, but there were like 30 cairns in this very, very short distance. It was just unbelievable how people had over-cairned this route, you know. And I mean, when I was young, I used to kick over cairns wherever I felt like they were unnecessary, you know. It's like, if you need a cairn here, you shouldn't be out hiking here, you know. As I mellowed out, you know, and came to rely more on cairns, I will add that too, I realized, you know, it's different perspective for different people, and some people feel more comfortable having cairns all along the route. And
yeah, but 30, and, I mean,
and
that's a little overkill. I mean, it's like, how many do you need? There's six here, so let's put seven. No, there's 29 here, so let's put our 30th.
Yeah, I agree. And quite often, you know, what happens is people will, this is my hypothesis, is that people are climbing a gully or a cliff, and, you know, and they sit down to rest. And so they, while they're sitting there, they just build a little cairn, right? And then, of course, what happens is people get on the wrong track, you know, and maybe they'll put a cairn or two along the route they're going before they realize that they're off track.
Right.
So then they retrace their steps without taking the cairns down, right?
Right.
So,
yeah,
it's kind of maddening. But I just remember this being the most overly cairned place I'd ever seen in the Grand Canyon. And it also spoke to the number of people that must climb Deva, right?
Yeah.
Because,
it was
certainly a lot of traffic going up there. And when we finally got to the summit, which is a really neat area of Torowie blocks and whatnot, there was a register up there, and somebody had been up there in early November. So that was the previous ascent before ours. So... So anyway, that was a fun morning, and we came back down, and just when we got below that topmost Supai cliff again, we decided to split up, and Art went back to our campsite, and then I had seen some granaries along the base of the Supai cliff to the east, and I'd seen those from our campsite, and I thought I wanted to check those out, so I did follow along the horizontal there below this cliff for, you know, about a half a mile, I guess, out there. And it turns out it's a really neat little spot because there's a couple of springs there at the base of this cliff and many, many different little structures that the Anasazi built in there. And it's just a pretty impressive architectural area. And there was even a couple of beams in some of these that, you know, for like lintels, I guess,
nice.
Over the doorways. And anyways, it was just really neat place to explore. And there was one spot where you could actually walk into a crack behind this big supai block forming the cliff and then walk along behind it and then come out like 15 or 20 feet farther along the cliff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was a pretty neat little, kind of a spooky area, and kind of, I could see it kind of being a spiritual center, or, you know, people taking that kind of care and attitude in it. I don't know, that's just my interpretation, but it was a fun place to be on a cold, sunny December 1st, or whatever, December 2nd.
December 2nd,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, 30 days in November, okay. So it's the 2nd, it's the 2nd.
Yeah. So anyways, it was a neat place to be, and eventually I had to give up pretending I was a First Nations person for a while, and then head back to our campsite. And I didn't mean that facetiously, by the way, that statement. I mean, I really felt that way, you know, when I was exploring this, like I was perhaps, you know, a primitive person, primitive in the sense that it was just 1,000 years ago or 800 years ago, and really, you know, just having a very interesting spiritual experience in this spot. So that's my context for that statement. So I headed back to hook up with Art, and since it was fairly late in the day, we figured, well, let's just hang out here on the saddle and have another night, right?
What were you doing for water? How was your water supply? Were you still running on the water that you brought up from Phantom
Creek?
Yeah,
I forgot to mention that because we had, you know, there had been this storm, right, in Flagstaff.
Right.
And so we thought there'd be plenty of water. So when we ran into this couple, Aaron and Ben, at Phantom Ranch, and they said, oh, we didn't find any water anywhere up there, we were a little nervous, and we brought a lot with us, leaving Phantom. But of course, then we find the water in Sumner, and there were actually many places on the top of the red wall, like on top of supai boulders that had rolled down, big supai boulders. Sometimes we'll have little water pockets on them.
Uh-huh.
And there were a couple of spots at the top of the red wall, like if you're traversing a drainage along the top of the red wall rim, you look down the drainage a little ways, and there may be a little bowl down there that's got some water in it, right?
Yeah, you bet.
And so, you know, Art carries a 60 millimeter syringe,
okay.
And he was filling up water for us all the time, right?
Mm.
All along this hike, we were able to find water, and which, you know, kind of it negated the requirement to carry so much, but you never know when the water is going to run out.
Right.
So you know, we would keep filling up wherever we felt that it was prudent. And then keep in mind, you know, when we're doing these day hikes, we're just carrying enough water for the day,
right?
So, like, when we went to Bradley and Demaray, we just carried, you know, a liter or maybe 2 liters or something like that.
Okay.
When we went out to Jones Point, it was just a small amount, et cetera. And even Dave and Brahma, we didn't carry much water up there. So the water was working out fine for us at that point. So anyways, we spent that night there, and then so the next day was the plan was to go. We figured we didn't want to go back to the south end to try and get up Brahma, right? To reverse our route and go up the route up towards Zoroaster to then climb Brahma, which is the standard route. So we decided we'd kind of stick with our original plan, which was to drop down through the red wall west of Deva down to Bright Angel Creek. And so we did that. We left the saddle, and immediately you can drop down 60 or 70 feet, something like that, to get below the red wall. The supai cliff that is forming that saddle between Brahma and Deva.
Okay.
And then we hiked a little bit to the north to the top of the red wall descent that goes down, Supai and Redwall Descent, that drops down into Bright Angel Creek opposite Ribbon Falls.
Okay.
And at this point, there's a Supai Butte, very, very beautiful-looking Supai Butte that's to the west of Diva. And I said to Art, I said, I think I saw some, you know, possible routes on that that I'd like to go try. And he said, okay. So he waited for me in the saddle there. And then I worked my way up the ridge to the butte and then walked around the south side. And I thought that there had been these chimneys from a distance, using a monocular. The day before or 2 days before, I thought that I had seen chimneys through the Supai there that would form fairly straightforward passages. But the chimneys turned out to be just crack systems.
Okay.
In the face of the cliff, and so I was a little disappointed. But then I started looking at the second one, and I thought, you know, it looks like I could potentially get up there without too much difficulty. So I tried it, you know, and the first part was about a 15 or 16 foot crack that I was able to get up to a small triangular ledge, and from there I could then semi-chimney in an open book with a crack there for handhold, and then that got me up to a little overhang at the top, and then there was just a step around, and I was up.
Nice.
And it's one of these things, I don't know if you've been in this position, you probably have, but you're doing the moves, and it's like, I got to keep going because I don't want to stop. I'm going to get freaked out if I stop and think about what's going on
right here.
I got to keep going. And it's only after you get through the moves that you think, I've got to go back down that now.
That's,
you know?
Right. That's
and
right.
So I was pretty exhilarated to be on top because it's a short walk up to the summit of this thing. And but when I was on top, I started worrying, oh my goodness, how am I gonna get down that? You know, how am I gonna reverse that series of moves?
Hmm.
And so from the top of this, I could wave over at Art, and there was a cairn up there, so somebody had already done this. And so I went back to the descent. And by the way, I had put a cairn at the top of the descent, so that...
Did you take it down when you passed it?
No, I did not.
Okay.
I did not. You know, well, you know, that was a necessary cairn because I put it up.
Right, right, exactly, yeah.
That's another joke. But,
yeah, I know.
But anyways, the point of the story was that I found the descent, and it went much easier than I expected.
Oh, okay.
So all that nervousness kind of evaporated quickly. So, but anyways, it was pretty exhilarating. It's one of those climbs where everything just goes together perfectly. It's harder than you expect, but it goes together perfectly, and you have a lot of fun on it. So, anyways, I went back and joined up with Art, and then we started down through the red wall. And you know, I remember there's a lot of these huge red wall boulders in there, and Supai boulders that have made their way down as well. So it's slow going, although fairly straightforward. And eventually you get down to the Tonto platform, and there's a dry fall there. But we walked around to the west, southwest of that, and then we went down. There's an easy slope that gets you down to Bright Angel Canyon, and this is the same slope that, ironically or coincidentally, that Bruce Grubbs and I had walked up from Bright Angel Creek with our cross-country skis on our backpacks
in
1979. So we had come down and skied across the road, across the plateau from Jacob Lake Lodge to the head of the North Kaibab, and worked our way down the North Kaibab. And because we were, you know, paranoid of walking through the lower Bright Angel Canyon corridor area with skis on our back, we just hiked up to the Tonto, and then hiked the Tonto all the way over to the Clear Creek Trail and went down to Phantom Ranch that way. So it was just kind of an interesting reminiscence, right, on my part. So we got down to the Bright Angel Creek and then followed the trail down a couple miles to the beginning of the trail, the old cattle trail that goes up onto the Tonto on the west side of Bright Angel Creek and south of the Buddha Temple complex.
Sort of Utah Flats north kind of thing?
Kind of that, yeah. Apparently, apparently stockmen used to bring cattle down from the rim, I guess in the winter, and then they'd take them up this trail. And there's some good switchbacks. I mean, there's some good trail construction here and there as you leave Bright Angel Creek, particularly in the Tapetes, right, where there's back there's switchbacks that get you up through the Tapetes and onto the Tonto platform. Once you're on the Tonto, it kind of disappears because, you know, stock and cattle could just go anywhere. But interesting, and there's barbed wire in there, and, you know, it was lots of evidence of cattle working. So, but that was nice for us to take that little bit of trail up, and it was a challenge to cross the creek. I remember that. We were kind of wondering how we were going to be able to do that. But fortunately, right in that particular area, the creek splits in two, and there's an island there. And so, you know, the flow on either side of it was typically somewhat was reduced. And, and I remember we got across without even taking our shoes off and staying totally dry. So, so anyways, we started up that trail, and we followed that along the Tonto. Until we got to below Johnson Point, and it's getting pretty late here, so at this point we decided to camp there next to a red wall, an isolated red wall boulder, and kind of in the middle of nowhere. And but we had hoped that the next day we would climb the red wall at Johnson Point and then try and climb Hillers and Clement Powell. Well, we had kind of realized that there was no way to get up to Hillers because you pretty much have to do a rappel when you come down from Hillers to get through the Supai and down to the Red Wall Rim to go to Johnson Point. So we had concluded that from our sighting on the opposite side of Bright Angel Creek when we were up higher on the Red Wall Rim there and also in the Supai camp. And so we figured that, you know, Hillers and Clement Powell and even Manu are probably out of the question. So we decided that we would then spend our time over in Haunted Canyon.
Okay.
And so we followed the Tapetes along, actually the Tonto, not the Tapetes, because at this point we were pretty far away from the Tapetes rim. And there's a series of springs that, come out on that slope between Johnson and Sturtevant Point and all the way over to Phantom Creek, actually. And some of them have a fairly good amount of flow in them, although it's difficult to see it because there's so much reeds and willows, you know, that that have grown up in there that you, I mean, I remember one place we were trying to actually see the water that we could hear it coming out of the ground, but we couldn't actually see it because there's so much of this dense willows and reeds. So, but interesting that, you know, that there's that water there. And I assume that's probably one of the reasons that it was appealing to the stock people, right? The stockmen to bring their cows down there. So they would have a ready water source. So, anyways, we followed that around the Tonto platform around and, worked our way down into Phantom Creek, well, it's pretty much at the top of the Tapetes, right?
Yep.
Is where we got down. And we knew that the next when we left Phantom Creek that we were going to be having to go up towards Utah Flats. And there is a good trail, as you alluded to earlier, from Phantom Ranch that goes up to Utah Flats, and then you can follow that trail around into Phantom Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
And since we hadn't been in there for quite a while, we decided to just hike down. We dropped our packs where we met the creek, and we hiked down to where, you know, the trail would head up towards Utah Flats so that we'd know when the time came exactly where to look for that. So we did that. It was like 20 minutes to get down there, I guess. And then we came back, back upstream, and carried our packs up to the junction of Phantom and Haunted Canyons, and dropped our packs there. And of course, this is a pretty popular area in 2009. We didn't see anybody, but there's tracks all over the place and evidence of camping and whatnot. No garbage, but you know, just evidence that people have been there. And and so we decided the next day we wanted to hike up Haunted because we'd heard that I think it was Jim Ullman or Ken Walters had been up through the Red Wall in Haunted.
Hmm.
And did you say right?
No, I just went humph.
Oh.
I hadn't a clue. Huh, interesting.
Yeah, I'd heard this. I'd heard it somehow. It wasn't strong information, but you know, it was something worth following up on. And besides, we like to do these things anyway. So we started up Haunted. And there's a good flow in Haunted in the lower part. And it's really tough going if you stay on at creek level. So there's the Use Trail that goes along the west side of Haunted there, and that takes you past the worst of that brush, and eventually you get back down pretty much where you get back down to creek level, just about where the spring rises up, and above that the bed is bare. Hmm. And in fact, when we went through there, it looked like it had been, you know, flash flooded pretty recently, because there was nothing there. It was just solid bedrock, right? Hmm. And very easy going. And so, interestingly, when you get into the narrows, there's of Haunted, there's a really, really interesting pinnacle that stands up. It's at the junction of the main Haunted Canyon and then the arm that comes down from north of the Colonnade.
Okay.
And it's a really neat-looking pinnacle that even shows up on the 7.5-minute maps.
Hmm.
So it's just a pinnacle it's a pinnacle of Temple Butte, or maybe it's Mauve below.
Okay.
It. And not in the red wall itself, but, of course, you got red wall cliffs all around you. But we looked at this pinnacle, and we thought, I wonder if anybody's ever climbed that. And when we got farther up, we could look back and see that there was no cairn on the top, so that was kind of interesting. But we continued up the canyon. It narrows. You get into the red wall. There's a really nice amphitheater there. And then we thought we could see a potential route out on the southwest side of this amphitheater. So we started up it, and it quickly became pretty nasty. Just really, really steep, rotten red wall. And it looked, again, like there had been a rock fall in the lower part of this area where potentially part of the cliff may had fallen away. So we just concluded that it was beyond our capabilities to get up through that. And,
okay.
And even if we'd had a rope, I think we decided that we wouldn't have tried it because, you know, it's just loose, sharp red wall blocks sticking out all over the place. And if anything goes wrong, you know, you could be in serious trouble. And it's just a red wall route after all. So we backed off at that point and then retraced our steps back down Haunted all the way to our camp. And so that was a nice campsite. I'd been there. I'd camped in this area in the mid-70s when I tried to climb Isis with my friend Chris Beal. And so we kind of in territory that we've both been in before. And Art had been up in this area, too, with his friend Barb Zinn many, many years before, too. So it was kind of a familiar area for us. And, you know, we enjoyed it quite a bit. The next morning, we got up early and started downstream and found the break that goes up towards the Utah Flats Trail. And it's pretty straightforward. And it turns out there's several breaks. I mean, when you're coming in from Utah Flats from the southeast, you can actually you can go up the break or come down the break that we used, and there's a good Use Trail there. Or you can stay high above the Tapetes and the Precambrian and get into Phantom even higher up. I think it's six of one and a half dozen of the other.
Yes.
But we went down to the lower one, and I think that's probably the better, stronger trail.
Okay.
So we went out that way and then worked our way along Utah Flats, or along the Tapetes, the Tonto platform, over to Utah Flats. And by the time we got there in the afternoon, it was getting fairly late again and really kind of nasty with a heavy wind, and we thought we were going to have some rain. So there's some boulders there in the middle of Utah Flats where you can get a minimum amount of shelter, and we set up Art's tarp and crawled under that and had this horrendous windstorm all night long. It didn't really rain, but it was pretty frustrating nonetheless, because it kept us awake a lot of the night. And, you know, this has happened many times to us in the past, so it was no big deal. But then, so the next day, you know, we're pretty much at the end of the trip. But so we dropped through the break that takes you down to Phantom Ranch, and hung out there for a while, had hot chocolate, and chatted with people. And it turns out there was another storm approaching, and apparently there'd been a lot of cancellations at the ranch. And so the guy we were talking to, I guess he was in the canteen there, he said, you know, you guys could stay here really cheap if you wanted to tonight in one of the cabins. And because we've had so many cancellations. And I tell you, we thought about it because neither of us ever stayed there, right? And it would have been a fun thing to do. But we decided, no, we probably should get up before the storm really, really gets bad.
Right.
And yeah, so so we left Phantom, and then we headed over to the Black Bridge, and there was construction going on the river trail at that point, and I think it was closed. So people, you know, people had to come across either the Silver Bridge or the Black Bridge. In any event, we decided that since we had extra time, we decided we would poke around and look for the. Oh no! Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm mixing things up. The river trail was closed, but we went across the Silver Bridge.
Okay.
And then from there, we hiked up the old trail that went down from the tip off down towards the Silver Bridge, and it's followable, but it takes some work. And modern hikers, unfortunately, have, you know, they typically beeline down these old routes, and so they just you know, form an erosional scar. And if you take the time to look to the left and the right, you'll see the nicely engineered, you know, switchbacks that the original trail builders put in, which are quite often overgrown, or they have boulders falling into them, or whatever. But we spent, because we had the time, we spent a lot of time working out all the intricate backs and forth, the switchbacks, and it was a lot of fun to put that together.
So,
you know.
So this is this is called the Miner's Trail, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
That's right. That's my understanding, and it comes up, it comes up to the Tonto just to the west of the tip off.
Right.
So you know where the tip off is on the South Kaibab, right at the top of the Tapeach Rim. And the trail goes down there through a series of switchbacks and then gets into the Precambrian and goes around a long ridge that sticks out to the west in the I guess it's the Hakatai Shale?
Yeah, something like
and
that.
And then works its way down switchbacks to the Black Bridge.
Right.
The Miner's Trail comes up from essentially the top of... it's just in a drainage just beyond, just to the south of the Silver Bridge, the Hiker's Bridge, and it's not evident right at the bottom unless you know it's there.
Right.
And then you can start up for it and find it. But it's just a really neat little route, and at the top it has a pretty spectacular, you know, switchback and trail work in going through the Tapeach. So
okay.
It was a lot of fun to follow that. We'd never done that before.
Cool.
And we had a lot of fun doing it. So at that point, then we were pretty much home, right? Home free. We just scooted up the Kaibab back to our car, and well, I think we were probably parked at Babbitt's or someplace over by the village, because at this point I think we had the shuttle to deal with. So yeah, it was a great trip overall, and you know the ambition to get, you know, six new summits didn't materialize, but we did get a few, and had a great hike.
Nice.
At the same time. So, yeah.
Very nice. Okay. So, what are we going to talk about next time?
Well, let's see. At this point, I there's some gaps in the hiking.
Okay.
I didn't actually do any hiking in the Grand Canyon in 2011. I don't remember why that is.
Or 2010?
Yeah. Well, that's right. No, 2010, I did do some short hikes, and we can talk about those next time. So we did a Speo Butte and Berry Butte, and There's a neat little hike you may have done that goes down to an old ponderosa pine that's below the Tepeach Rim in the Horn Creek area.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, we did that. And so those are the kinds of things we did in 2010, just short things.
Okay.
And more or less day hikes. But and it wasn't until 2012 when we started really getting back into the more extended hiking. So probably the next time we chat, I'll just kind of touch base on, you know, a number of these short little adventures that we did in successive days or successive weeks in 2010 and 2012. And
that sounds great.
The next big hike is for Art and I was in when we went up to finally climb Manu and in the Buda area. So we did get into some of these peaks that we had tried to do on our November trip, like Clement Powell and Hillers and Manu, and had some success on some of those. But that's not till 2013, so.
Okay. All right, well, that sounds like fun. We'll do that next time. And with that, we'll wrap up part 26 of a Grand Canyon Oral History interview with Jim Haggart. Today is January 30th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin, and Jim, thanks so very much.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I always appreciate the opportunity.
That's a lot of fun. Hang on.